Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the, I can't believe, February 1st meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. At this time, we'd like to ask those in attendance to please keep your videos off and your audio muted unless you're presenting information or speaking in public. And of course, that's for the people that are participating by Zoom. We're offering translation services for our Spanish-speaking attendees. To access translation, please click on the globe at the bottom of your screen and then the language. At this time, we'd like to ask if anyone who might need translation would please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and raise your hand.
Oops.
Rocío, could you please translate that?
Okay. Buenas noches a todos. Vamos a tener servicios de interpretación. Si usted necesita oír la reunión en español, háganoslo saber en abajo de la pantalla hay un globo y por favor oprima allí. Muchas gracias.
Okay. Well, the board did meet in closed session, and we had a discussion about personnel items. We reviewed and had possible action on employment, dismissal, or discipline of district employees, as well as a conference with our labor negotiators regarding legal counsel and our legal counsel with Dan Block, our Director of Human Resources, regarding employee organizations, specifically SLCTA and SEIU. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Can we get it so that I can see Catherine and Eve, please? Okay, there's Eve. Okay, I'm not seeing Catherine yet, but I think we have a consensus on the order of business. So we want to move to item 6.01, which are our student representatives to the board. And we have a new student representative to the board this evening, Lexi Moreno from Pacific Beach High School. And I'd like to welcome Lexi and ask Lexi to begin. Lexi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Lexi. I'm a student at PV. I'm a junior. I expect to graduate in June of 2022. I just wanted to go over some key points at PV that are happening. So we currently have 60 students enrolled at PV. Five have graduated so far, and we expect 90% of current enrolled seniors to graduate by June. Some of the academic highlights this year is our continued partnership with the City Farm SLO. The farm class provides an opportunity for our students to learn about sustainable agriculture, regenerative soil, livestock care, and cooking with fresh vegetables. And the City Farm has been giving a 40-year lease, which is excellent news for our school's program and partnership with them. The farm remains the most popular cross-curricular, so it gives credits for science, PE, elective, economics, and English. It's our most popular cross-curricular class offered at PV. And then another highlight is our annual mock presidential election in our government class. So several students will be running presidential campaigns and debating one another in front of like our whole school. So we're going to hit on like key components of like actual presidential like debates. So for example, global warming, political parties, kind of, you know, stuff like that. So I'm one of the candidates that's running for presidential election, so I think that'll be really cool for PB, and it'll really bring our school together. And a final highlight is the significant increase in PB students enrolled in the Quest dual enrollment classes. This year we made a huge push to get students enrolled with the help of the Quest counselor Allison Dexter. So 12 students are currently taking training classes such as automotive, culinary arts, and customer service. In the past, only 1 to 2 students will enroll, so this is a dramatic change. And then additionally, we have been offering Cuesta dual enrollment classes on the PV campus, such as Get Focused, Stay Focused, and English. And then you earn 10 English credits during one semester for that. So that's a really cool class. I'm actually in one of the Cuesta dual enrollment Get Focused classes, and that's really cool. I really enjoy having that offered on campus. So yeah, thank you for taking the time to hear about the academic highlights. I look forward to presenting next month.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Lexi. And I think it's really exciting to hear about the dual enrollment. I mean, it's great to hear everything you guys are doing in it. I know I've been over to the farm, and that's really, really pretty cool. And of course, you know that our food services is working really hard to do farm-to-table food for everybody there. So it really fits quite nicely. Well, welcome. And I just wanted to point out something else to people who might be listening. As you say, you're a junior right now. It's February, but because of how PV works, you're saying you should be able to graduate in June, right?
Yeah. So I am a junior. So my graduation year is 2023, but I'm kind of just busting credits out at PV. So I'm really just, focusing on trying to graduate by my goal, which is June of 2022. Which takes a lot of dedication and hard work, but I think with how PVs ran and how, our teachers are so, focused on getting us to graduate, I think I'm going to be able to do it. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and I think our experience as board members has been that you are not a singular student at PB, that we see that kind of attitude and that kind of go get them at PB among most of the students there. So. Congratulations and welcome, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Totally. Thank you so much.
Let's move on. We have Nick Gray. Nick, are you there? Either Nick, let's try Nick first.
Hello.
You're good.
Okay, perfect. Apologies if you can't see me very well. I'm locked in my mom's room. I have a newborn nephew that is in the living room. Awesome.
Congratulations, Uncle Nick.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited. First time uncle here. I'll be talking about it for a long time, I'm sure. So along with the ASV class, I went to Universal Studios on Friday. That was super fun. We also took some student Senate kids, and we went to a leadership conference where there was a keynote speaker. So that was really cool. Our surf team did really well in their contest on Sunday, and that was in Ventura. We ended up winning first place in the league, so that was really exciting. And then we wanted to give a special thanks to Danny Fahey for advising and supporting our surf team always. Our wrestling team became undefeated league champions last week, and we wanted to give a shout-out to all the wrestlers as well as the head coach, Mike Honorod. And then all of the winter sports are coming to a close, but we're hopeful that the playoffs are going to go well. Tonight is the senior night for girls soccer, and we're hoping that basketball will go well as well. And then on Thursday, a lot of ASV students and other students that are involved in things such as CTE pathways, clubs, or sports are going to the middle school to talk to the eighth graders. They're having an outdoor assembly, and I'm pretty sure it's an annual thing where we go and we give a little bit of insight about what life is like at Morro Bay High. And like I said, it'll be various clubs, sports, and CTE pathways, as well as the counselors giving the presentation about what to expect at Morro Bay.
I'm sorry, when did you say that was, Nick? What time?
That's on Thursday.
Do you know what time that is?
Let's see. I know it's during fourth period. So what is that? 10:30 a.m. to noonish. Yeah. And then we did have our play over the weekend, Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. And that went super, super well. And then I just have a few pictures. Let's see. So yeah, our play went super well. I hope that you were able to see it. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Catherine. Catherine, you're muted.
Wondering, I was just asking who directed the play.
Ms. Costeca.
That's a noble endeavor. Congratulations.
Great. Any other questions for Nick? Oh, Mrs. Frame.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the Morro Bay High School Drama Department for a great performance. It was, I was able to see it along with Mr. Buckman, and it was students' incredible talent. And what particularly was amazing to me as I was, you know, we're sitting out there in that outdoor venue, and it's a real interdisciplinary effort with, you know, a lot of different students from different areas. But they're standing in these, you know, Midsummer Night's Eve costumes, and it's 46 degrees, and it was unbelievable. But it was a fabulous, fabulous testament to students. So please, my congratulations to them. It was great. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll let them know.
So, Nick, I wanted to say I'm so sorry I missed that play, because I actually have acted in that play before in my life. But I was in L.A. welcoming in my newborn grandchild. So mine was born January 20th, my first grandchild of my only son. So it's very delightful to have all these newborns welcoming in 2022. Thank you.
It is. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you. Didn't your son attend Morro Bay High School for a while as well?
Yes, he did. Before he went to live with his dad, he was there. Yep, some long time ago. I mean, he's not elderly or anything. he's 34. Yeah.
Chris. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry, Mark. Yeah.
Yep. So I too got to attend. The night that Evelyn was there, it was so impressive. I think the outdoor setting, as Evelyn mentioned, I think it's really interesting because Midsummer's Night Dream is mostly outdoors. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of easy to identify. For me, one of the things that stood out was this brought home to me the STEAM concept that we have in this district, right? Because I got it. The actors were out there. But the people that did the sets, they were amazing. So they took whole walls and took them off stage, and one person could do it at a time because of the way they designed it. The lighting, the technical stuff, it was all science, technology, education, and math. So I was really happy about that. And just have to quote this one line from the play. Sorry, Eve, I'm going to do it. I never acted in it, but I'm going to do it. Oh, what fools these mortals be. And I just, you know, it was just a great line. And so they did a great job.
And I would like to remind everybody who's here and who's watching that the ability of Morro Bay High School to have the play outside in the new amphitheater, in the redone quad, we want to thank the taxpayers and everyone who voted on and really made sure that our Measure D monies are spent and being spent at the high schools, which is where we primarily intended them to be. This never would have happened in the old beat up quad at Morro Bay High School. So I just want to point that out as well. And at Morro Bay High School, I think you guys are going to be getting a performing arts center as well. And I think they're working on that. So this is very exciting. Great. Well, thanks very much. Let's see if Noah's here. Andy, do we see Noah? Okay. Well, if Noah from San Luis Obispo High School does sign in a little while, then we'll go back to him and give him an opportunity to tell us what's going on. Let's move to item 6.02, which is the Teach Elementary Program Highlights. Mr. Mayfield?
Yes, good evening. As you mentioned, we have Teach Highlights tonight, and teachers Mary Ann Emery and Rex Lanier are here to share some highlights from Teach and introduce their students.
Hi, I'm Marianne Emery, fifth grade teacher at Teach, along with Rex Lanier. I do have a presentation to share, but I think, do I have share? Oh, yes. Okay. we're good. Here we go. Okay, and we also have a couple of our students with us this evening, Ty Murgatroyd and Mia Romano. They're going to be telling you some more about what we do at Teach. So school-wide, we have a deeper learning strand. In fourth grade, we do focus on coding and robotics. Fifth grade, our focus is on engineering, design engineering process. And then sixth grade, they work with multimedia. Okay, let's see if Mr. Lanier is able to check in on this one.
Hi, can you guys see me?
I can hear you.
All right, sorry, I'm at a basketball game. So, but short things, we try and focus on our engineering strand tonight, where we introduce to our fifth graders the design wheel, not only as a way of thinking and problem solving, but as a way for lifelong learning as well. And I believe we have one of our first students is going to help us kind of explain the design wheel a little bit more tonight, as well as give a couple examples of how our students kind of view the engineering process as we go through this. If Mia Romano, are you here, Mia?
Hello. Okay. Hello, my name is Mia and I'm a Teach Tiger. Today, I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about the engineering design process. As you can see on your screen, there are 8 steps in the design process. They're defined. You must find the problem. Identify your constraints on the solution. Brainstorm multiple solutions for the problem. Select the most promising solution. And prototype your solution. Test and evaluate your prototype. Iterate to improve your prototype. Communicate your solution. We base all of our projects off of this design process. So whether we're doing one of our major projects, which was the mini golf project, or if we're just doing a challenge in the engineering lab. Teach, we're allowed to be exposed to a lot of different types of engineering tasks and materials. We can design and build things that we could use in our everyday lives. We are given just enough examples to get our imagination going, but also keep focused on our goals. I really like being familiar with the engineering process because then I know how to build things, what to expect, and I know the design process. My favorite so far was designing a town challenge because I had to think about building items in layers, and I got to work with my hands. It was right up my alley because I hope to become an architect when I grow up.
Thank you, Mia. So here we have a little video for you to watch about the engineering. Well, it should be there. Let's see. It's loading. Thank you. as you can see, our students learn through projects like these. That's what we're about at Teach, project-based learning. And one of those projects actually started as the trimester one iInnovate lesson that was put out to fifth grade. And in this lesson, students, they use the wood blocks to create, rebuild a town that had disappeared, and using their understanding of volume and other math skills, and then they had to explain their reasons for their parameters. So we just took that lesson and teachified it, meaning we expanded on it to meet the needs for our students and what we do at Teach. So my student, Ty Murgatroyd, he's here to tell you more about the process that we went through for this particular project.
Thank you and welcome, Ty.
Hi, my name is Ty Murgatroyd, and I'm here to speak about the St. Charles City Project. So we started with making a list of necessary businesses for a city, like a police station, a school, a grocery store, a restaurant, and a hospital. Next, we were assigned a business and used 1-inch wood cubes to create the building for it. Using the scale, 1 inch would equal 10 feet. We also used our classroom as an example to compare the size of other businesses. For example, the classroom is big enough for a hair salon, but not a grocery store. Once we decided on the size and shape of the buildings, the blocks were then glued together and the volume of each building was calculated. Next, we each designed exterior walls on Google Draw and glued them to the sides of the buildings. We also created parking lots and landscaping with the scale in mind. Dr. Pandey from Cal Poly, who is a student and parent, gave us a lesson on city planning so we would know how to figure out the best locations for each business. Mr. Valadeo, another student parent, gave us a lesson on transportation engineering so we would understand how streets are planned. He taught us how to use Google Maps to measure actual streets and buildings. We also learned about the safety advantages of roundabouts, so we decided to put one in our town. Once the businesses, locations, and roads were in place, teams of students worked together to create a city park, people, a playground for the school, and a cemetery. We named the city St. Charles after our school mascot, Charles the Tiger. One of the most challenging parts was keeping everything to scale, from the buildings to the people to even the trees. Through this project, we became better at understanding scale, designing, persevering, and collaborating with each other. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ty. All right, and thank you for listening to our presentation. That is all we have for you.
Great. Well, let's see if I think we might have some board comments and questions. I think, hold on just a second. Catherine, did you have your hand up a while ago about this?
I did. I was just impressed by the phrase teachify it. So I was kind of enjoying how that happened. But it also...
I just made that one up.
Bravo. On the spot. But it also does bring to mind for me that... that this is very, very much an offshoot of like Cal Poly. This is like, so Teach has now become like a little mini Cal Poly, which is a very exciting way to think about
it. We have the advantage of our location being right next to them. We have a lot of our parents as professors, and we connect constantly with Cal Poly going over there. For labs, they come to us, bringing in them in as guest lesson speakers whenever we can. We are constantly taking advantage of that.
Excellent. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
And Eve, you had your hand up.
Yes, I wanted to say how impressed I was with what the kids are doing and that engineering and how it is truly learned by doing, as the Cal Poly motto says, and you explain why there's such a close association. But also, I'm wondering how excited the kids must be when you have things like measuring the egg catch and then, you know, how gooey and messy that can get and how the kids must really enjoy. I mean, I cannot imagine anybody having less than 100% attention for that. Did you measure the success of the egg throw or drop by whether the egg broke or not?
Yes, that was one of the criteria in success, is that it could not break. And I believe it was like a 30% success rate with the egg catchers.
Well, it's a pretty risky one, so I can understand it. But anyway, so interesting to see the presentation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great. Mr. Buckman.
So I have to say I was visiting Teach, and there were students in the playground with pizza boxes, and I wasn't inquisitive enough to ask why. And so this is great, because now I get to see the finished product, and it's got to be a little strange seeing all those kids out there with pizza boxes, but it well paid off.
Well, it was a challenge space-wise, that once they started building them, where to keep them, because it took them a few weeks to complete the project. So there was a storage issue. We piled them up as best we could in the classroom and wherever else we could find.
Great. Other questions or comments from the board? Well, thanks. As always, it's really exciting to hear what's going on at Teach, of course, as it is to hear what's going on at all of our schools. One of the things I think is really exciting in what you talked about was being able to use the iInnovate lessons to help augment the things that you're already doing there. Can you talk just a little bit about how you guys have used the iInnovate program and how that's helped your school? And just for a reminder to people, the iInnovate program is something that's been funded by our San Luis Coastal School District Foundation.
Yeah, so this first lesson was a great, I mean, it tied in perfectly well with some things that we are already planning as far as the engineering. So it was a great launch for that, to be able to have that and say, okay, now we can take it in this direction, and just really add on to what was provided to us. We do try to focus on a different type of engineering each month. So that was our perfect time to focus on transportation engineering and civil engineering overall. And still bring in the math from our bridges and just really span all curricular areas through the project.
Great. Well, thank you again. Thank you very much. And we appreciate your coming, and we really appreciate hearing from the students as well. The board likes to hear from students, and we, you know, very, you have some very articulate folks there. So thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's move to item 7.01, board correspondence. At the time the board agenda was published, there was no correspondence to the board. So let's move on to item 7.02, public comment. And I'd like to read a statement before we begin public comment. At this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda. Generally, this section of the agenda is for individuals or representatives of a group to address the board on issues not listed on the agenda. Speakers who wish to discuss items on the agenda are requested to wait until that item comes before the board. However, comments may be given on agenda items at this time if it is not possible for a speaker to stay until the agenda item is heard by the board. If you submit written comments on a topic, you will not be allowed to also speak on that topic. Comments or correspondence submitted anonymously will not be accepted. If you'd like to speak in person here, please submit a yellow public comment request form to Mrs. Dawson. In-person public comments will be heard first. If you wish to speak via Zoom, click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and select raise your hand. When your name is called, you may restart your video if you wish and unmute your audio. If you need assistance with your video, please let us know and we'll attempt to fix it. If you have a problem with your audio, please click on the thumbs down icon and we'll attempt to assist you. Written public comments submitted prior to the board meeting will be read by Mrs. Sheffer following the verbal public comment. All public comments will be limited to 3 minutes, a limit of 450 words in written comments. You may not cede any remaining time to another speaker. Any portion of your comment extending past the 450-word limit may not be read aloud due to time restrictions. All written comments that are not read into the record will be made part of the meeting minutes, provided that such comments are received prior to the end of the meeting. Please be aware that written public comments, including your name, may become public information. There will be no ceding of time. Let's see. First of all, I believe we have, let's see, is there anybody from the public that would like to address us? Anybody that's in the meeting right now that would like to talk to the board? Okay. Yes, could you come on up and state your name, and then we'll begin your 3 minutes.
Hi, my name's Corinne LaPelle.
Okay, go ahead, Corinne.
Okay, welcome. Thank you. I'm a parent of two daughters in the school district. I have a fourth grader and a seventh grader. My fourth grader who attends Bishop's Peak comes home in tears because she has a hard time learning in a mask. I was talking to a school teacher friend in the district, and she's very concerned about our kids. She says the kids with speech problems are suffering severely. I have friends with children with special needs, and we're failing them. My seventh grader at Laguna tells me that vandalism occurring on campus is because kids are angry. They're angry because they're being told to mask all day, every day. They're not allowed to take down their masks like some of the board members have done during this meeting to speak, and that creates a lot of anxiety and anger. This is very confusing to our children because they're free to go to a restaurant and remove their masks. If schools want to continue this mask mandate, then why not have the teachers act like the servers in a restaurant and they can mask themselves? Also, these kids are well connected to the world. They know that their friends in many other states are not wearing masks in school. Our kids are supposed to have fair, equal, and meaningful education under the law, which isn't happening. I saw the district send out a pamphlet about the summer school learning program. I think the district agrees that our kids are behind and need help. However, they need to do more than offer the program, especially if they want kids to attend. They need to advocate to unmask our kids, because I can assure you they will not attend if they are masked. I'm sure you've seen all the pictures online of our governor not wearing a mask this weekend during the NFC Championship football game. He publicly commented that he only removed his mask for a photo. However, there are pictures all over the internet of him unmasked the whole game. My kids are asking, why can the governor be unmasked and they cannot? I'm here today to ask the board to advocate for our kids so they can breathe in school. I realize the school board chose to hand over their authority to the California Department of Public Health. However, there are numerous school boards and individual school board members who have joined together to let Sacramento know that these mask mandates do not make sense. Please show my kids that you have their best interests at heart, because they feel like no one cares. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public that would like, that's here, that would like to address the board? Yes, please come up and state your name, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Jesse Elliott. I have two kids in Macheco. I don't have much to say except that I support everything that Corinne LaPelle just said. I think this board, as she said, many school boards across the nation who are showing leadership and not standing down based on what the public health department says. I think we need school board members that show leadership, not just following along what the government regulation, when an entity says. So I urge you to stand up, go downtown, look around town. People at farmers market, nobody's masked. People in restaurants, nobody's masked. People in many stores around this county, many people aren't masked. We're moving out of into an endemic state. Let's get our kids out of masks. Right now, my kids are masked, and you know, I asked them, some of them, they don't care, because we've made them passive. They've been able to adapt to this, but they don't understand the psychological effects that are diminishing their education. I need to be able to see your lips. They're missing out on that education learning to read people's tone, facial expressions, etc. And I ask this board to stand up, be leaders, tell the public health department that you don't accept this. It's time to move on. We got to wait to the 15th until the state. We'll see what happens on the 15th when the mask executive order ends. But based on what I've seen in the past 2 years, I don't have high hopes that we're going to still go in the right direction. So that's all I have to say. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board who is here? Okay. Seeing no one, I believe we had someone who wishes to speak with us on Zoom. Corin, you were here. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to be coming on Zoom. Mrs. Dawson, is there anybody on Zoom who wishes to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, we do have two written comments. Mrs. Sheffer?
The first is from Julie Peinato and states, your school volunteer guidelines state that school volunteers must provide to the front office documentation of full vaccination status or weekly formal documentation of negative test results that shows the location and date of specimen collection in accordance with the health officer order on August 11, 2021. As of August 11, 2021, we have more information that is available to all of us regarding that all individuals, vaccinated or not, can catch and transmit the COVID-19 virus. Please change this outdated policy to include and treat all volunteers equally. All volunteers, regardless of vaccination status, please submit a negative COVID test prior to entering classrooms. If our goal as a community to keep COVID-19 off campus, testing for all individuals makes sense. Thank you. And next, from Dan Clancy, I have not participated in any Board of Ed discussions around masking. I recognize the difficult position boards are in under the state mandate. Any advocacy should be directed to the governor. Yet, the board communication in December brought the topic forth, and it deserves a response. Do the cloth masks we have put on kids' faces for the past 2 years work? What do the scientists and increasingly of late the media have to say? All quotes are fact-checked. I have submitted a formal letter along with these comments. Dr. Leanne Wenz, CNN, cloth masks are little more than facial decorations. Dr. Michael Osterholm, President Biden's COVID advisor, if you think by wearing a cloth mask you're protected, it's simply not true. Dr. Lisa Brousseau, at the end of the day, cloth masks, in my opinion, don't work in any form. Europe, CDC, and World Health Organization repeatedly advised against masking children under age 6, does not recommend masks for primary students under 12. New York Times, masking off-ramps are necessary. San Francisco Chronicle, should kids wear masks at schools? Maybe not. CDC, mask use and ventilation improvement to reduce COVID in elementary schools. Mask use was not statistically significant in lowering cases. San Francisco Chronicle, if Gavin Newsom and London Breed aren't afraid of Omicron, why should everyone else be? Watching the Rams 49ers game this weekend with 80,000 unmasked fans, including Governor Newsom unmasked with Magic Johnson and not question the sanity of masking kindergarten kids. Students in Denmark and Norway, no masks since May 2020. May 2020. France, no masks for any kids under 11. Ireland, no masks under 9. Norway and Sweden, no kids of any age in masks. In the UK, Kate Middleton visits schools and mingles with unmasked kids. Surely Kate must be in the ER hooked up to a ventilator. But forget what the scientists and media say. You can find COVID dashboard data across the country. What do you find when comparing COVID when comparing school COVID dashboards of Arizona schools that are mask optional versus SLO schools, no significant case rate difference. San Luis Coastal has done amazing work this year. There's much to celebrate. The teachers and all staff have been amazing. Dealing with the anxiety of COVID that affects everyone differently is extremely challenging. I get it. The schools have done everything to make the year as normal as possible. Thank you. But after Omicron, it's time to follow the science and unmask the kids and teachers. Start with the little ones, TK, K first. The kids and teachers both deserve it.
Okay, thank you very much. Those are all the public comments that we have. We appreciate everyone spending the time to, for those of you who came out, coming out and speaking to us, and for those of you who wrote to us, we appreciate that as well. We'll move on to item 8.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, so just a couple of quick things for the board. First off, you know, COVID oftentimes with substitutes, we hear a lot about teachers and staff, those types of things, schools, but what I will tell you, and really my purpose today is to give kudos to our food service, our transportation people, our custodians, our grounds. You know, COVID has hit that group as well as they've gone through. And of course, you know, got to have buses run, got to feed kids every day, those types of things. And so they've really had to step up. So a lot of people working overtime, working weekends, doing whatever they can to make sure that we serve our kids. So, again, I just wanted to give kudos to that whole side of the house, BG&T side of the house, and our food service people for all their work that they've done. We had a meeting last week with county officials about recycled water in Los Osos. There's been a lot of kind of changes in staff in the county over the past few years. And so I do feel like we've kind of have a good spot now. Ty Green was helping us from the district standpoint. And so we are kind of on a path forward to kind of relook at the agreement that the board passed quite some time ago, but really looking at how we can begin to utilize the recycled water here in Los Osos, specifically Los Osos Middle School, for the fields, and then again, looking at the other locations around Los Osos to help with that effort. So, you know, really, I will update the board as we learn more, as we move forward with those negotiations and those conversations.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Okay, 8.02, Ed Services update, Mrs. Frost.
Yes, thank you. Just two short updates for you. I just wanted to let the board know that Holly Warwick, our workplace infection prevention coordinator, and I held two open forums over the last two Friday afternoons. A week and a half ago, we had our family open forum. We had well over 200 people in participation with us. We talked about COVID information. We went over quarantine. We went over new isolation guidelines, just some complicated things that we are now implementing in our schools. Had some fantastic questions from our parents and really a transparent opportunity to talk about COVID and how San Luis Coastal is addressing that. We followed up last Friday with the same thing for our staff, and we had over 50 staff members attend. Same opportunity. What does this mean in our school? What are our mitigation efforts? And then an open opportunity for question. So two really good opportunities for families and staff. And then just one other short thing, just a reminder that Jeff Martin and his team are working diligently on putting together our summer experience. Each of you has this beautiful flyer that went out to families this week. And I know Jeff is going to present to the board within the next couple of meetings and give you specifics about the program.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Frost. Is there any board members who have questions for Mrs. Frost? Okay, 8.03, Measure D update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just quickly, you know, construction continues at San Luis Obispo High School, Morro Bay High School. And at our next bond study session, so Measure D study session, I will be reviewing the demographic enrollment report that came through. So we'll walk through that with the board. Some interesting information to look at, in particular, the addition of potential addition of TK throughout the district, what that means. I think you'll find it kind of fascinating in terms of looking at the different enrollment studies. They do kind of a high if there was, you know, a lot of new growth. They do kind of a moderate study, and then they actually have a low study. So despite a lot of the, you know, growth and development, in particular in San Luis Obispo. It's just interesting to kind of see those numbers. So I look forward to walking the board through that and kind of taking a look at our sites. And I think this will correlate nicely with the facility master plan that the board saw at a recent board study session as well. That just has a couple tweaks left, and I'll be putting that up on the district website for the public to see. And so I think it'll all kind of help correlate, come together for you in terms of looking at our facilities in the future.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Okay. Seeing no one, we'll move to item 9.01, trimester one, elementary common assessments update. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull this up. Is it on here, Mandy?
Help.
Yeah, there should be a presentation up. No. It's on the agenda. If we can pull it up from the agenda, Mandy, is it up? Is it on here? That it's already queued. Oh, there we go. Right here, elementary T1. Beautiful.
There you have it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
A couple clicks here, and we'll get started. All right. So tonight we're bringing you the elementary first trimester assessments. These were mostly done in the month of October. And then the month of March or February now coming up will be when we do our second trimester benchmark assessments. At the last meeting, we presented the SBAC data, the balanced assessment assortium assessments. And we mentioned at that time that we'll try to get back on a regular cycle of bringing information to the board, as there's been some interruption for COVID. The first assessment results we'll share with you tonight are the K-5 math trimester benchmark assessment. This is related directly to our curriculum. So this comes from Number Corner. Number Corner is like what a lot of people would think of as calendar. But of course, a lot more complicated and complex than that. And students are asked to show their thinking and explain their thinking in their assessment results. As you can see from this slide, whoops, let me go back one. There we are. We didn't do the math assessments last year, but in 2021, but we do have results of three of the last 4 years. It's basically a 1-4 scale, 1 being not yet, 2 approaching. 3 meets the current benchmark of the trimester one, and then exceeds would be meeting the end of the year assessment. And we've combined meet and exceed into the green band in each of these bar graphs that you can see. As you can see from this, we are up a little, of course, in the students who are approaching and not yet met from previous assessment years. This is broken out by, let me get rid of this bar here. How do I get rid of this bottom? There we go. Perfect. All right, this is broken out by grade level. And you can see the district results on the left-hand side of the screen. All grade levels taken into consideration, and then kindergarten through fifth grade at the bottom. Our sixth graders, both in town and on the coast, take a different math exam, so you won't see them as you typically would see K-6 results. They take the MDTP examination. And again, as you can see, you know, it varies from grade level to grade level in terms of the number of students approaching versus those who have met or exceed the benchmark for trimester one. This is broken out by our student subgroups. At the top, again, you have district results combined. than non-socioeconomically disadvantaged students, SED students or socioeconomically disadvantaged English learners, redesignated fluent English proficient students. These are students who were once English learners, and then students with disabilities at the bottom of the screen here. And again, the math trimester benchmark assessment results by subgroup. Our writing on demand, there are three genres that students need to relate to: narrative, information, and opinion. Each trimester, they do a different genre, and they're judged on end of the year benchmarks. Again, a 4-point scale, 1 through 4, 2 approaching, 3 meeting, and 4 exceeding. We do fairly well in writing, though you can see that our results are pretty similar from this year to last year. We were able to do writing assessment via distance learning, and so we do have results from last school year from students. And writing was, you know, pretty solid from year to year. The results haven't changed much over the last several years. This is by grade level, district on the far left, and then kindergarten through grade 6. Our grade 6 students, both in town and on the coast, take the on-demand writing assessment. The benchmark assessment system, or BAS, is a one-on-one reading assessment where teachers meet individually with students. It's a high-quality test. It takes a lot of time to administer, of course, with students meeting with their teachers one-on-one. However, the longer time teachers get to spend with students in a one-on-one environment, the better the results are and the more keenly aware they are of what the student needs in terms of reading. And again, you'll see that we do have results from last year and from 1920 school year. In kindergarten and first grade, we don't give the BAS in second grade now because we now have FastBridge assessments, which go second through grade 12. And so we administer the BAS in reading kindergarten and first grade. The numbers are up a little bit in the not yet reached, you know, as we've seen across the board with our assessment results. And I would say the predominance of our intervention work right now is currently in the area of reading. And then this is broken out individually by grade level, pretty similar results from district, kindergarten, and first grade. And again, I would say the more intense grade levels that we're giving reading intervention in are first grade and kindergarten and second grade, the lower grades. And then this is broken out by subgroup, district at the top, non-socioeconomically disadvantaged SED, English learner. Typically, you don't see students redesignating as English proficient in kindergarten, first, second grade. Normally, if a student comes in as an English learner, it takes them more time to acquire English, and so they redesignate or reclassify in the upper grade. So that is why you see the result there in that particular category, and then students with disabilities at the bottom of the screen. Okay, and then FastBridge is a little explanation there of exactly what FastBridge. It's not a curricular embedded assessment. It is more similar to what students would see on a standardized test and not directly related to our curriculum like the other assessments. This assessment, we have results from the beginning of the year in August as well as October results. So you will see a comparison in the next few slides between the beginning of the year and October. With the other results, we do those at each trimester. So we did the results in October for trimester 1. We'll do it in February for trimester 2. And we'll be able to share with the board the comparison between trimester 1 and trimester 2 results at the end of, or probably middle of March, I would say. We'll have those results ready for you. But these slides do give us an opportunity to see comparison from August to October. So district results on the left from August, and then the results from October. You can see there a significant reduction in the areas of not yet and approaching, and an increase by 10 percentage points in those students who met or exceeded the expectation on this particular assessment. Yes?
Mr. Mava, I just...
This is Frank.
Quick question. So really, the assessment that was given in August, students had just basically arrived on campus, right?
And correct.
So, because what it appears to me that is this, you know, that these bumps that we're seeing, it's really testament to the work that our teachers mm-hmm. are doing really in the classroom and being our students being at school. So I'll be curious to see, like you said, the T1 and T2 data.
Correct.
Fast-pitched.
Yeah. Yeah, February is a busy month, as you know, in the world of assessment in elementary grades, and teachers will be busy giving math, writing, reading assessments in February for parent report cards in the month of March.
Are these assessments done one-on-one, or are they students can take?
FastBridge is done in a group setting.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and then this is second through sixth grade students meeting proficiency. And again, fall comparison. If you'll look at the bands in groups of two, so on the far left, you have district August to October. Then the second set of two would be grade two in August, grade two in October, and so on, all the way up through the grade levels. And you see primarily a reduction in students in the approaching and not yet category, and an increase in the number of students who meet or exceed the expectation at that grade level.
Mr. Buckman. Followed by Mrs. Rott. Dr. Rott.
Sorry to interrupt, Rick, because some of these numbers are amazing, and it's great to see all the increases. But one of the things that always intrigues me is grade four to grade five. There's a huge increase in the approaches.
Yeah.
It seems that happens pretty regularly.
We see that across assessments as well. You'll see it on the CASP or SBAC assessments, a big jump from four to five. I think the level of rigor goes up in those assessments, and the expectations for students' insight in terms of their reading increases greatly at the higher grade levels.
So, let me just get this. So this is what I heard is the level of rigor, so which means to me that's it's harder. They have to think more.
Correct.
And so that actually sparks helps the improvement. Did I catch that?
Well, I think the test is more difficult. Let's put it that way. The test is more difficult at grade five and six. And what is expected of the student in terms of an answer rises significantly from grades two,
so
three, and four.
The response to that is to do better. Yep, that's great. Thank you.
You bet.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Catherine, I think you're muted.
That's to keep my dog from barking. Sorry. Rick, what remedy do we offer students who don't meet proficiency in math or in reading or in writing? Is there something you can describe to us?
At each school site, we have an MTSS team there now working on interventions, and students go to...
For anybody who doesn't know, could you explain what MTSS is, please?
Sure. MTSS stands for a multi-tiered system of support, and basically think of it as intervention time. So what interventions are we offering students who are not meeting benchmark in whatever the topic would be? And there are a team of people at all of our sites. You approved in the LCAP late last year in June, a significant increase in the interventions offered at sites. And so there are a team of people at each school monitoring data regularly, making adjustments to the intervention groups, and interventions are happening throughout the day in reading, writing, and in mathematics. Although I would say probably more so in reading than in writing and math, although we do have interventions in those subjects as well. During wind time, which is what I need time, students go to a small group for their level of work. And then some students are left within the regular classroom, obviously a smaller number of students who are probably working on grade level or even above. And they also get what they need during that time. And so the teacher adjusts her instruction for a group of students in front of him or her at that time.
Thank you.
Bet.
Mrs. Roger has a question.
Please.
Thank you. Mr. Mayfield, to piggyback on what Mr. Buckman said, I have been noticing for a while, it seems to me, that something is occurring in fifth grade where we're seeing, I mean, for over years now, a significant drop in comprehension, that students are not achieving at the rate they were up through fourth grade, then there's a drop. And I'm wondering if you have noticed that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I wonder what kinds of concepts are being introduced in the fifth grade, and if maybe we're not allowing enough time. I know that teachers are pushed to get through the standards, but are we pushing kids maybe more quickly at that particular juncture and they're not able to really grasp full comprehension of the standards?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Has it been a topic of discussion in your department?
Certainly. Yeah. We daily probably we're talking about different assessment results and the appropriate response to those results. But as you mentioned, Mrs. Roger, this is over time. This is a pattern over time that we've seen for many, many years. And for me, it's just the level of complexity of fifth, sixth, and above, what they're asking for kids to do on those assessments is extremely challenging. I don't think any teacher feels like they have enough time to cover all the material that they need to cover, you know, and do a quality job as well in social studies and science. It's a big challenge and one that we've been talking about, you know, for as long as I can remember. But as you know, they even did a TV show on Are You As Smart As a Fifth Grader? Knowing how difficult that math is and science and the subject matter that they're asked to do. But it's, you know, we hone in on that data every single day. Mrs. Storm and I met today with a couple of principals to talk about data and exactly what would be the appropriate response at that particular site for that particular set of data.
Okay, thank you. I don't at all intend to minimize the efforts of the teachers.
Certainly.
I know that they have a lot that, you know, is expected of them in a given year.
Yep.
It's just that fifth grade has been a red flag for me for a long time, and I've just never mentioned it.
Agreed.
I'm glad to see that other people are also aware.
Agreed. Again, on this particular graph, this is fast bridge reading. And you look at it in groups of two. So starting from the top, August results are the second graph. The top one would be October. And then non-socioeconomic, August to October. And what you see there is a bump up in results in every single subgroup from August to October, which is exactly what we would expect to see with the amount of work happening now in terms of interventions in our sites. And I think we'll see similar bump up in results from trimester one to trimester two when those are presented to the board, probably in Friday notes sometime in the month of March.
Mrs. Frame, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Mayfield. I just two questions. One, I just notice as I'm looking at this, and I see that our students with disabilities are scoring, kind of significantly, you know, higher than our ELs. And I don't know if that's been a trend. Has that been a trend in the district? Is it something that we, what are your thoughts? And I mean, I'm it's great that the success that, students are having, but, do we have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. A couple things I would point out in the students with disabilities category, each of those students has an IEP, an individual education plan, And sometimes that plan indicates that these assessment results are not appropriate for that particular student. So those students would be removed from this group that's being presented here. So this would be students, and it could also be a student who has a speech IEP, for example, that wouldn't really impact their mathematics learning in any way, shape, or form. So the IEP is for a different, category of learning. So this is the one category. In all the other categories, all the students assess and all the results are counted. In the students with disabilities, some are counted, some are not, depending on what their IEP indicates.
Thank you for that clarification. The other thing is, as we're looking at, those students who are, and maybe this is off topic, who are receiving the what I need in that particular time, are we, how do we monitor, the students who are receiving that, and then they exit, and that sustained growth within that tier one, that seems like a really difficult task for our teachers to,
Mrs. Storm has done a fantastic job working with the intervention teachers at progress monitoring. And so we spend a lot of time going over data at sites to see the growth and movement that students are making. When we see students improving and it's appropriate to move them to another group, that action is taken. And that includes students within the classroom during that what I need time. So progress monitoring is key. And then the second thing is her team is also, and that MTSS TOSAs, intervention TOSAs, have done a great job of planning out professional development that's presented to teachers on Wednesday during staff meeting time. And that primarily gets at that tier one instruction, regular classroom instruction, and how we can beef that up. We're also currently in the process of creating a three-year professional development plan because time is so crunched, and the amount of time we have to work with teachers has been impacted as well. So we're trying to be very thoughtful and do the most powerful things that we can do with teachers to improve their practice in what we call tier one or regular classroom instruction.
Well, I appreciate that because it really, the improvement that we're seeing in our students is clearly a result of what is happening in our tier one with our teachers.
And agreed.
Subsequent. So thank you.
And just for the public's information, TOSA stands for Teacher on Special Assignment. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. Mayfield, again, I have noticed for quite some time that when looking at the assessment data, and this is also something that I was discussing with Mrs. Sheffer, so she has noticed the same thing. After our non-SED students, our highest achieving students, although it is a smaller group, our RFEP students are frequently coming in the second position in terms of growth or how they test, testing high. And I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that, on why that might be happening.
Yeah.
Students that were former English learners, but who are no longer English learners, are testing second behind our non-SED population.
Right. Yeah, great question. A significant number of students who begin as English learners move along the spectrum of English learning with assistance, of course, from their teachers and intervention specialists, and then redesignate as fluent English proficient, as you know. Part of the process of being redesignated fluent English proficient is passing tests at a proficient or exceeding level. And so then they move from the English learner category into the RFEP category. And those students are making the progress that we would expect for them to make and getting the support that they need to be successful. And I think you see it in the results there. The students in the English learner category that are left are English learners in part because they haven't shown the proficiency on the test because they're not there developmentally in their acquisition of English. So the English learner pool, we remove the students who are successful and they go into the RFEP category. And those students are getting the support that they need and the instruction that they need to be successful.
So once they're RFEPT, are they continuing to get supports?
They get monitored for 2 years, and if they need supports, they get supports. And then the EL specialists at the elementary sites do that monitoring. So their results are tracked every year. We look at all different assessment results, the benchmark ones that we shared with you tonight, the CASP results that we shared with you at the last meeting. Those are all monitored, and if students need more supports, they're certainly given that.
Well, it's great to see that our RFEP students are achieving. They are continuing to achieve, and they're in the top 20%, of their peers.
Agreed.
So,
as you pointed out, oftentimes their results are very close to the all group.
To the non-SED.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Go ahead. No, please, Mrs. Frame.
When we're looking, and I just thought about this, for the RFEPs, does that, when a student is RFEP, does that also include the RFEPs, the IFEPs? They get that, the home learning survey, and then they're really IFEP. Does that include that too?
It does not. So these are students who were English learners.
I haven't heard that term before. Could you explain it?
Initially fluent English proficient. So when a student comes in who is potentially an English learner, they're given a set of exams. And if they pass those exams in English at a high enough level, they are designated as an initially fluent English proficient or an IFEP. So they would not be counted in the RFEP category.
Thank you.
And those tests are rigorous. Many years ago, we petitioned the state to give that to native English speakers, the EL tests, and about 74% of them, they gave us permission, and about 74% of the kids would have qualified for English learner services, native English speakers, randomly selected. Wow.
Okay, carry on.
Okay, that's it.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Buckman, go ahead.
I thought there was a little more, right? This is one of those ongoing things. I know it affects almost every district in the state of California. And it's, as Dr. Prater pointed out to me, we probably have the best test scores in the county. In fact, I think we do. So this is not a bad thing, but it's students, non-SED students and students with less supports at home. And we can't afford. So it always seems to go up with a gap. And if you could do anything in the world, get all the money in the world, what can we do to just close that gap?
Yeah. It's got to be worth more than $64,000 at this point in time. But that's the $64,000 question. And I think people all across the state are looking at that. I will say that, as I mentioned earlier, every single day in instructional services, this is the topic of conversation. And, what exactly can we do? We're honing into data on individual students like we never have before. Mrs. Storm did a presentation in cabinet yesterday morning that was excellent. And, really getting into the nitty-gritty of what's going on instructionally with students. And I think because we're fortunate to have the resources that we have and the expert staff that we have, throughout the district, all of our teachers, instructional aides, the administrators, I think we're going to see movement. But I will say, and I agree with you, Mr. Buckman, it's not good enough that we're outperforming other districts and the state of California, but we do hear that frequently when we work in groups outside of our district. People say, man, you guys are killing it with these groups of students. How do you do it? Kind of thing. So.
Well, just a reminder that the next actually three topics of discussion will be specifically related to interventions that the district is using in order to help close the achievement gap, which I know the board has made our top priority. Oh.
Chris,
question? Yes.
Not a question.
Go ahead, Mr. Buckman, of course, yeah.
No, it's not a question for Rick. Actually, I just want everybody to understand that for us, that screen is really small. And so many of us have put the presentations on our laptops, and it's not that we're not paying attention. It's that we really want to see what's going on. Sorry, Chris.
No, that's okay. I know this is not an action item, but is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Under 90 minutes too, Mr. Unger.
It was, thank you. I'll bet you're going to do 9.02, aren't you, multi-tiered systems of support? Mr. Martin. Jeff.
Yes, welcome. Good evening. Thanks for having us this evening. And our goal will be tonight over the next 15 minutes to just give you an update on the state of iInnovate in our district. That's a lot of rhyming there. An update on the state of iInnovate in our school district. And let me go ahead and share my screen here. And joining me tonight are Katie Peters and Sarah Garcia, our amazing iInnovate TOSAs. And again, our goal, this was on the agenda, it's under MTSS, right? Our multi-tiered systems of support. But I really want to just reiterate think of that as that pyramid, right? With tier two, as Rick mentioned, being that intervention piece when students need additional academic support. It's often called the MTSS or the intervention. What we're talking about with iInnovate is really the tier one piece. So it's the bottom of that pyramid that is our regular classroom instruction, all right, for all students. And the iInnovate piece is where we're addressing that need to allow students the more hands-on, relevant, meaningful learning, much like you saw the great example of earlier with Teach and their presentation on that really integrated learning approach. And so if you recall, iInnovate is our initiative at the elementary level. So our kindergarten through sixth grade at our elementary schools. And we've done a lot of great work in this area. So just as a reminder, iInnovate is an approach to learning that integrates different subject area standards, providing students a chance to connect classroom learning. Classroom learning to the outside world while equipping them with the knowledge and skills necessary to succeed in college, career, and life. And really, when we talk about this approach and furthering our initiative in this area, we really have a two-pronged approach. One is to really go after those teachers who are eager to move faster and deeper with this work. And so we have over 30 teachers represented throughout all of our elementary schools, with each grade level represented. It's 20% of our elementary teachers have volunteered to be our learning experience designers. So this is, again, volunteer group. Think of them as eager. They want to learn more. They want to be a part of this type of providing learning experiences for their students in their classroom like this. So what they've been doing is field testing these iInnovate lessons that have been designed by Katie and Sarah. And they've been trying those out. They've been piloting these lessons and giving Katie and Sarah the feedback so that we can have an example, an exemplar, if you will, of the type of learning experiences that we're trying to provide for our students. So the other approach, right, or the other piece to this isn't just our learning experience designers and our volunteer teachers, but our general elementary classroom teachers. So how are we supporting them? We have to keep in mind, we're not just going after our LEDs, but how are we supporting all of the teachers? So again, as a reminder, Katie and Sarah have developed entry tasks for teachers to have a chance to get into our amazing innovation labs at each of our elementary schools and to teach a standard along with a piece of equipment in that innovation lab. So again, similar to the type of learning that you saw Teach kind of showcase earlier, it pairs a content standard with that piece of equipment in the lab and really getting students and teachers excited about that hands-on learning. And so a lot of their efforts this year have been supporting our teachers, knowing that this is a shift, this is something a little bit different, and been supporting those teachers by co-teaching and in different ways that we'll talk about in a minute. The other piece I want to mention is that we're continuing, we've actually expanded the scope of our work with our protecting our watershed lessons. Many of you may know about our Trout in the Classrooms project that we see in fourth grade. And so we've continued to work with that organization called Creeklands to provide those lessons to both third and fourth grade. And it really does align with the iInnovate style of learning. So I'm just happy to report that we are gaining momentum with each of these groups, our general group of teachers and our LEDs. So with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and pass this over to Sarah, and she can take you through our iInnovate survey.
Thanks, Jeff. So we're excited because we launched the beginning of this year with those two strategies, and it's January. So at the beginning of January, it's February, but we at the beginning of January, we had all the teachers during a staff meeting do a survey, and we wanted to know, how's it going? How are the entry tasks going? Are they going into the lab? What's happening with all of the support that we've offered so far in the first trimester? And overall, we had, out of 158 elementary teachers in San Luis Coastal, 76% responded to the survey. And when we asked them if they had taken their class into the innovation lab, 77% of teachers had taken their students into the innovation lab. And then 23% have not been in yet.
I like that word, yet.
Yeah, we do have a plan, which we'll talk about more, to get into all of those classrooms. And so we're really excited about that.
Hi, thanks for meeting with us today. So to further, when we asked those teachers that the survey, we wanted to ask them, so if you have been in the lab, you know, how many times and what sort of things have you done? So those are those two graphs there. So we know that 77% of teachers have already gone into the lab. And with that, you can see the breakdown at the top graph, one to three times, four to six times, or even more than six times. So we were excited to see that teachers are going in and going in often. We're also knowing that they're working on entry tasks. There might be those LED teachers that are going in. And then there are also teachers that are working on their own lessons. And so that's exciting to see too. So we're glad to know that the labs are being used and that teachers are going in multiple times.
We did want to focus on those 23% of teachers that have not yet been in the lab. And so we asked them, well, if you haven't been in the lab, why not? And they identified two major things as training and time. And so we were kind of excited by that because our plan is to go into all of the elementary school teachers and co-teach a entry task lesson with each teacher. And in doing so, we're training teachers in real time with their students, adjusting to their needs, and giving them tips and ways that they can actually embed it into their day in a multidisciplinary way. And so it doesn't feel like this extra thing that they need more time, but it actually becomes something that is part of their day and embedded in multiple subjects. And so they feel confident going in, and they actually were hoping to change that mindset into our entry task lessons being more of a time saver. And so our goal is to be in every classroom by the end of the year, and we're actually ahead of schedule. This week, we have the honor of being at Pacheco Elementary, and we've had all teachers sign up. So it's really exciting, and we're chipping away at that 23%, and we're hoping to make it 100.
And I think Katie and Sarah are a little bit humble too. When I talk to teachers about, the support that they're giving them, I think there's been nothing but positive feedback, and they feel empowered to be able to then go forward and be a little bit more independent after the support from Katie and Sarah, which is really nice. So when we look at the...
Jeff, hold on. Never mind. I thought we had a question here, but we'll save it for the end. Thank you.
Okay, not a problem. Oh, someone's going to turn the lights on over here. Sorry. I think the custodian was doing their...
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, like I was saying, so when we're talking about support, we also have kind of a two-pronged approach with that as well. We want to look at individual support that we can offer. And Katie and Sarah, like they mentioned, have been out in supporting teachers across the district at the elementary level. And we've really been able to differentiate that support depending on that teacher's level of comfort, their level of understanding and knowledge about this fashion of teaching and learning. And so what you'll see is they can either go in and model one of these entry tasks lessons and do it for them while the teacher is in the classroom observing, and they can maybe debrief afterwards. Or they can co-teach, right, where they actually share that responsibility to teach the lesson, which is comforting to some teachers. Or they can just offer feedback. Maybe they'll sit in the back of the room, watch the teacher go through that entry task lesson, and then talk with them afterwards and kind of debrief that lesson. So there's different ways that support is offered depending on the level of comfort and, with the particular teacher. So, like was mentioned, 67 teachers across all elementary sites have been directly supported so far this year. That's over 1,500 students that I think have been impacted with this idea of teaching in a way that allows them to apply their learning, which is exciting. And then the goal, like Sarah said, with this approach, by the end of the year, every classroom teacher will have been provided that one-on-one support from iInnovate TOSIS. And we've really shifted our focus over the last, I would say, Katie, Sarah, maybe a month and a half, 2 months, to really get into classrooms and have them offer that direct support in less time kind of writing the curriculum and the lessons piece, but there's always a trade-off. And we think that right now, this is what teachers need, is more of that support. So we haven't neglected completely that curriculum piece or the writing of the lessons, but that is something that we're going to disbalance.
Jeff, can I also add, for our LED teachers, we are also out coaching with them. And like Teach shared earlier today, they shared what they had done with the iInnovate lesson. And we are doing that with all of our LED teachers and adjusting it for their site and their school and their student needs so that they're turning it into something really meaningful for them. So we're doing one-on-one support in that way as well.
In addition to the one-on-one support, we have kind of all teacher support. We've been provided some time during our Wednesday staff meetings where we've been trying to provide some coherent messages around entry tasks, how to use our innovation labs, keeping people up to date with our LED teachers and their great work. And that's just gone really well. And you can see there, that lab reset, the super important piece of just the maintaining the functionality of our labs so that when teachers go in, they can expect to have it, ready for their use. There's a screencast link there that's just for your reference if you'd like to see more about that particular PD time that we shared with our teachers. That's a recording of it. Go ahead, Sarah. You want to talk about our thank you gifts?
Yeah, so the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation and the iInnovate team just wanted to thank teachers and honor them for all the hard work that they've been doing this year and just jumping in towards those innovation labs. And so we gifted each teacher with a book that really has the spirit of I Innovate. And so one of them was a book all about different mistakes that were actually really great things, like the sticky note, and then, or how to be a maker, or what happens if you fail. And so those mindsets that go around being in the innovation lab, we gave every K-6 elementary school teacher a book and some goodies and some stickers for their kids and a notebook. And it was really just to say thank you and that we see them and how hard that they're working.
Yeah, super important.
Which leads us to the next thing, that we hope that we are a little glimmer of bringing joy to practice to teachers. And so this is a slide deck of a class that we offered. We called it a winter crafting class. And it was purely for fun. If teachers wanted to come after school, not paid, but go to their own innovation lab and use a laser cutter. And we bought them these little wooden ornaments and they could decide to make something. So if you look at some of these pictures, you can see that we were Zooming from one of our labs, helping them get started. And then everybody was Zooming from their own lab. So we had 19 different teachers touch in with us from 6 different sites. And it was just fun to see them have a good time. And there were the celebrations when they got it working and they were so excited. So it was just a fun, joyful time for teachers to feel like, oh, I can do this. I can be successful, and then turn that success into something they want to do in their class with their students.
And I would say this too, Katie. I think when I saw the joy of practice, and I know we, you know, created this presentation together, what I thought of was how the I Innovate style of teaching and can really become that joy of practice. Because what fires teachers up and gets them excited is when their students have those aha moments and they have the wide eye and they're inspired. Right? When they can light those fires of excitement with their students and their inspired learners, that's what gets teachers going. And so this style of learning can be really invigorating and you can, teachers can really, you know, find their passion. It's, as we know, it's very rewarding work, very challenging work, but this can actually just kind of elevate that joy of practice for, with teachers as well.
Which is very true, which leads us to our favorite one, which is our next slide, and that joy of learning for students, right? They're so excited. And this is, Mark was saying earlier that this is kind of tiny, so we wanted to even read you some of these quotes from students that we've heard from just recently when we've gone into the labs and been working with classrooms and teachers. So a second grader says, "Can I come in every day?" Yes. We hope so. I've never done this before. At first, I thought it was impossible, but then I kept persevering, and now I think I may be an expert. Was from a second grader at Monarch Grove, and we just loved the language that that student was using. Another one was, "This is so cool. I can't believe that this is at our school." We heard that over and over again. We visited Del Mar, and students were just, we invited them in at lunchtime, and we had so many students in the room and they were so excited. It was just great to see that enthusiasm. And we had to apologize to the yard duty because they were not where they're supposed to be, but they were safe. And our last one, "Wait, I haven't learned that yet. Can you teach me so I can do it?" Again, a fourth grader at Del Mar. So hearing these things, seeing students get so excited about what they're doing and then connecting, you know, today what we were doing was learning about solids, liquids, and gases, but driving a Dash robot, or going over math problems and learning how to code a BBOT to the answer, working together and collaborating. So it's just very exciting and very rewarding. And we just thank you all for our opportunity to share this with you.
Yeah. And I was actually saw this joy of learning today when I was at Pacheco and first grade class, and they were doing stop motion with just some, I don't know if they were sight words, but they were using stop motion, and the kids were just so excited to be able to learn in that kind of creative and unique way. So it was great to see.
Cool.
Our last slide tonight, we're not going to actually play these videos, but I did want to just kind of draw your attention to them. These are different perspectives around this I Innovate initiative. On the right-hand side, voices from our leaders, including Dr. Prater, as well as our industry partners. I think I actually might play for the first 30, 40 seconds of that one. I know we're up against our 15 minutes here, but I think that's really just as a tickler if you want to go in, and those of you who have access to it can listen to the rest later. But and then on the left-hand side is our student evidence of student work around those Model I Innovate lessons that our LED teachers are piloting. So if it's all right with you, I'm just going to play the first 30, 40 seconds of this video, and then I'll wrap it up.
We're on the cutting edge of undoing what we thought we should be doing, which are the three R's, in 180 days of instruction.
For kids that are going through, what are those skill sets? It's really that skill set of failing is not wrong if you learn.
That's not how the workplace is. Like, you're going to start something, you might totally mess it up and have to completely redesign it and start again. And I think getting kids thinking like that rather than saying, okay, I learned X, Y, Z, and I passed this cool test at the end, and that's how it goes. I don't think that's healthy, because that's not real life. That's not how it works.
That was a good preview, Jeff.
Thank you. So anyway, that's just a little tickler for you. And I just appreciate you carving out some time for us to share the great progress that we're seeing with iInnovate. Any questions tonight?
Well, before we take questions, Jeff, I do see that Mrs. Robertson is here, and she's the executive director of our San Luis Coastal Foundation. And it's through the great efforts of the foundation and the financial support of the foundation that we were able to have the iInnovate program. And Christine, I'd like to find out if you have any just comments or really quick statements you'd like to make.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Yeah, I would love to just say thank you to the board. Obviously, even though the foundation is really proud to be behind the scenes trying to enable and resource this initiative, it's really only possible because of the partnership with your board. And what we've seen over these last 2 years is just what an outstanding partner the district is for the foundation, that we've had to all pivot and adapt. You heard a little bit from Jeff and Katie and Sarah, even this year, how they are tracking some of the challenges on the ground and shifting their strategy and trying to target resources to meet the changing needs. And this year with our last 2 years, I guess, with COVID, have been really tricky for the rollout of this type of work. And this team has been so creative and dynamic and passionate. And I spend every day reflecting on what a compelling partner the district is, what incredible staff you have, what incredible vision and leadership your board shows, and what a privilege it is to be able to go out into our community and represent this district. And so I know that you guys have been faced with a lot of challenges this year, a lot of things you're needing to solve for and work through and figure out priorities and resource allocations. But the way that you've partnered with us on this initiative has just been very impressive and really, really appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine. Are there board member questions or comments? Mrs. Frame.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Martin. A couple of comments. One is, iInnovate was really kind of a lifeline during when our students were at home with the project boxes. And it kind of really set the stage. We heard from so many parents and students what kind of, the lifeline of that project-based learning. And what I appreciate hearing from is the level of support that we're giving our teachers, since our teachers are really kind of boots on the ground and they're really feeling kind of pressure coming from a lot. So I'm really happy to hear that you're, able to tailor need to what the students, individual teachers need, because I think that's really critical to continue to make this program grow successful. One thing as you were, giving the presentation that I was thinking about is, in what ways do you think the experiences that they're having in the iInnovate labs, how that's transferring to learning in the classroom in all different areas? What What does that, I mean, it happens clearly, but, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I could open it up to Katie and Sarah, but initially I would say that I think the goal is for us to be able to have that I innovate style of learning, not just limited to our labs, you know? So hopefully that is our goal now, is to have that lab space could just kind of open people's eyes to what's possible. And that would transfer back into the regular daily classroom instruction. And obviously this is something you can't do overnight. This is that initial step that we want to be able to just show teachers, students, parents what's possible. And so from that standpoint, I think we're making good progress. But ideally, right, this would be something that we would be looking at in terms of that deep and transfer level learning and how it takes place in our classrooms on a more consistent basis.
And part of it, I think, too, is to feeling like it's a library of a holding place for a lot of things. So things can be taken out of the lab and used in their room. And so teachers don't have to feel like I innovate when I'm in the lab. Like, we want them to think that that's happening all the time and that those things are just some tools that might help them. But Sarah and I kind of laugh all the time that we kind of felt like we were doing this, and this is why we wanted this, you know, really wanted this job, but we did it with tape and cardboard because we did it without an iInnovate lab. And so we're thankful for what we have, but we know that teachers are amazing and will take these ideas and just embrace that hands-on kind of feeling and attitude.
And we've seen it time and time again. We'll come in, do an entry task with a teacher, either co-teaching or we'll model, and then we'll stay for their second half and watch them do it. And then it just sparks something in the teacher where they feel comfortable, they feel confident, and then they take that BBOT that we were working with and they're like, wow, I can do this in science. I can do this in ELA, I can do this in math, and they get excited about it. And then next time we see them, they're like, I used the BBOT during my math centers with one of my challenging groups, and it was amazing. They increased engagement, and it was just, we see that so often that it's sometimes hard to keep track because we're constantly on the ground with them and talking to them and checking in on them and saying, how's it going? And we see them taking what they've learned and then applying it. And in some cases, they reach out again to us and they say, hey, okay, I've mastered this. I really want to know about that. Can you come back? And we always do. And that's some of our favorite emails to get. So
one other.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. And then after that, Eve.
Another quick comment. As I was listening to you talk, and I was listening to a little snippet of the video, what brought to mind is the iInnovate is creating kind of a safe space for failure. And that's really what all of those, you know, industry people, when we went to go visit, they talked about that ability to persevere through failure, that's not, you know, the best first idea may not be. And so creating opportunities for our students in safe, fun ways to fail, it sounds counterintuitive, but it's part of an asset that this program offers. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Eve, you had your hand up?
I did. So I was going to say, it's very exciting, and I know that it's going to encourage them when they're in high school, perhaps, to keep on with experimenting in the CTE paths, and so it's all good connection. Also, their ability to take this back and write about it because they're so enthusiastic, and as you were saying, taking things, making the connections that I believe they will. But it's all great to see, and it's very, very futuristic and good to see. And I'd like to get one of those BBOTs. Yeah, wonder if I could.
They are for sale. Not ours, but in general.
Yeah,
send you the link.
Well, let's see. My granddaughter's almost 2 weeks old. Do you think she can start?
Amazing what they do when they're young, but
yeah, if she starts saying ba 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 ba, then you know that she's
ready.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Thanks.
I'm curious about the, on the survey, there were 23% of teachers said they had not been in the lab yet. And I'm hearing you say that for the 39% who said the reason was more teacher training, that you're offering that. But of the 57% who said it was a time issue, are you helping them to look at their schedules and determine where they might be able to carve out some time, or will you follow up with those, with all the 23% as we near the end of the year to see if they have been able to take the opportunity to use the lab?
So,
like, if there are 23% of the teachers who aren't using it, that means there, you know, is a number of our students who have not been able to have that experience yet.
Right, right. So one of the things we are doing is we are offering we go into schools. So we've referenced Pacheco this week. So we sent out a calendar to Carmen and just blocked off times throughout the day so that we could accommodate all 21 classrooms at Pacheco. We have done that with some schools and are moving forward to doing it with all of our schools. So we really make it a point to know that everybody is signed up so that we feel by the end of those weeks when we've reached all the schools that everybody will be there. But we're also making sure if a teacher has reached out and asked for help that we're doing that. And as far as, you know, referencing the time, one of the things in our training and working with teachers is also kind of telling them how this might help them in their time. Like if you have a math review, but you can also use stop motion to really embed that in an engaging way, you might create more time in your day. But we know that that training has to come first to kind of take care of that time. So we're hoping to kind of get all of that collected in giving them those co-teaching time opportunities. And like I said, we'll do that at each site for every teacher this year.
So just to follow up, when you do that, when you go to the site and make sure that each classroom has that opportunity, is the classroom teacher also part of that? So it's almost like an opportunity for them to observe and see how it works, and that can be a real confidence booster, I would think, just to provide them to say, oh, think, you know, yeah. I can do this. I see what happens here. This is something I want to participate in, and I want my kids to have.
And one of our strategies has been that Sarah and I will go together. And so an example today was that Sarah was teaching the task to the students, and then I pulled the teacher aside to even give him a little bit more opportunity of showing him, oh, this is how this robot works. This is how you connect it to the phone. Here are some of the entry tasks that we've done previously. So it's nice that they were able to go in together so that the students are very engaged and the classroom teacher can observe that, but then also get a little training into what we're doing with the other one of us at the same time.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that insight.
Mark.
Thank you, Chris. Hi, Katie. Jeff.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. I noticed throughout this that there's and this is the second time I've seen this presentation, so each time it's just better. So I have to say, I see a lot of group work. And in another location, I heard from industry how important that was. Can you talk about how that works at our level, at the K-12 level? How is that? I mean, it seems to be important.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we heard the industry leaders, right, a lot of that is about their collaboration in teams, right? And that's that collective, you know, thinking that we need, that we see, that's a necessary skill. So I think that's that's very intentional. So you observing that isn't just by happenstance. It's very intentional that we're building in opportunities for students to have those experiences where they're collaborating with one another. They're really forced into situations where they have to communicate. And when you start in kindergarten, early pre-kindergarten, all the way up through, and you're giving them repeated opportunities for that practice, they're going to build and develop those skills. And as we know, writing is tied to reading and speaking, and all of those skills are needed. to be effective at the next and for the jobs that we want our kids to have. So that's just a quick summary. So it's very intentional on our part. Katie, Sarah, anything else on that?
I was going to mention, I think it was Evelyn that talked about the failure, and if it's not, I apologize. But one of the things we see is that the kids instantly with each other, without needing us or any teacher to tell them, they will say, oh, wait, I didn't code that correctly. Let's fix it this way. So they have that collaborative conversation. They're critically thinking about something, and they get that instant feedback that they don't even need an adult to tell them. So I think that is amazing power of all of that combination, that working together and that failing forward, failing quickly, and then coming out with solving a problem. And they just feel really empowered and really engaged when they do that.
So I saw that and I understand it, but one of the things that I've observed with this is that they also build upon each other. And to me, it almost looks like they're mentoring each other. So I've got this. Okay. So I just want to make sure I'm seeing that right. I mean, it's just an amazing thing to watch the same age group and then for them to be able to just start teaching each other, but mentoring at least.
Yeah, that's something that naturally happens with those opportunities. Yeah.
And I can actually give you an example of something that happened today. We were doing stop motion, and one of the students pulls out one of the lab stools and realizes they can use it as a tripod. And then they start to share it with the rest of the class. And pretty soon they're all using stools as tripods. And then another group realizes that they could add narration to enhance their stop motion animation about their science word. And so they say, can I share this with the class? And so they stood up in front of the class and shared this new knowledge with everyone, and everyone was excited about it. And thanks for the tip. And then they all went back to work and they were excited to add that to theirs. So they really do. We the lessons and the environment that we provide is just a stage or a setup for them to practice these very complex skills in a way where it's okay to not know how to navigate these tricky conversations, but we can guide them and coach them on embracing different ideas and perspectives to enhance their work.
Well, and Eva, I think you had your hand up again, but I was just going to comment based on what Mr. Buckman said. This is also the kind of thing that we're encouraging with our number quarter as well. So I think we're seeing this in other venues in our school, in our classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly right. I think what Jeff was showing, the little vignette he showed before from our industry leaders, talks about the need for collaboration and failure and all the things that we're talking about. Eve, did you have your hand up again?
Yes, I just remembered when I reviewed this whole presentation over the weekend, seeing a student amongst the industry presenters. I wasn't sure who he was, but he seemed young, and he's talked about Christmas lights and aluminum foil and these items that they had to put together to make something. And he said, even if they failed to achieve what they wanted to achieve, at the worst case scenario, pardon me, they still had Christmas lights. So no failure is a bad thing. And because there's no one way to answer the question, it's open-ended, right? So it's so good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Again, this is just a discussion item, but I'll see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address us on this. No. Well, Jeff, Katie, Sarah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it, and we love your enthusiasm. And this is exactly the kind of thing that I think we know engages students, and engage students are students that are going to achieve. So thank you very much.
Thank you and the board for letting us advance the board priorities and the work around the district. So thank you.
Yep, exactly. So it's 8:00. We're going to take a 10-minute break right now. The board will take a 10-minute recess until 8:10, and then we'll reconvene the meeting at that point. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. We'll move on to item 9.03, middle school reform. And that would be Jennifer Parda, or that would be, let's see, Mr. Bloom and Mr. Calandro. I think, oh,
and I
Mr.
made an O'Connor appearance for you.
Is there introducing
you
it.
There you go. Thank you, guys. It's 10 after 8. I think we'll be here till 10 o'clock after Mr. Calandro and Mr. Bloom's presentation. Just kidding. Just kidding. All right. Happy New Year. We're here this evening. We're going to talk and present about middle school reform. But before we do that, you know, as I sat back and I listened to Rick's presentation and then Jeff and Sarah and Katie's presentation, and we were talking about data from our elementary schools, and we're talking about iInnovate through sixth grade. And the opening slide that we have about middle school reform really speaks to your vision, the board priorities, about establishing the culture of excellence, the culture of excellence for our middle schools. Because as we are hearing this evening about all of the great work being done at elementary school, it reminds us, really important reminder, that middle school is that bottleneck, that middle portion that is so important and pivotal to that development through high school. And as I've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Prater and Mrs. Frost, who are former middle school principals, and then working alongside Mr. Bloom and Mr. Calandro, you know, we see this as so, so important to the future trajectory of our kids as they get into high school. And we are going to talk about the middle school reform that's taking place and will continue to take place under your guise and your wisdom and your vision and board priorities, and using the schools to watch as the anchoring document. It's a research-based, and I want to commend both Mr. Bloom and Mr. Calandro on the work that they're doing with their staff. And they're going to present the vast majority, and then I'll circle back at the very end. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Bloom, who's going to drive the presentation. Thank you, Carl.
Mandy, could you please allow me to share?
You can share.
Let's see. Oh, geez. On my end, maybe. Hold on. So I have a new computer, and I have never shared with Zoom on this thing. Zoom, please share.
Mandy, can you share the document for Mr. Bloom? So Carl, just hold on a sec. We can put it up on our side.
Okay.
So Mandy and Carl, if you'd like to move to slide 3, I think we're right there.
All right. Thank you for having us. I'll jump in and start. As Leslie was saying, the middle school is more than just that transition between elementary and high school. Years ago, our state took a look at the importance of middle school as it a standalone idea. And that's kind of when we changed from being junior highs to middle schools, because the philosophy around middle school changed. It's a completely unique time in human development. It's the largest brain growth since our children were 0 to 2. There's the most amount of brain growth that happens at a time when also they're transitioning from concrete thinking to abstract thinking, as well as developing their future personalities. And as we know, anybody that's had a middle schooler knows that there's a lot of trials that come before that personality gets settled in there. So there's a lot of emphasis on that social, emotional, an intellectual personality identity growth with this age group. And really, when we look at middle school, one of the changes that came out of the early studies in middle school reform was it's really important to have specific programs that are supporting that intellectual development, but also all of those other pieces, and really looking at the whole child with middle school. So if we can go ahead and switch to the next slide. So we've been doing two things at our middle schools. This is just kind of a quick timeline of where we've been and what we're doing. Los Osos had started the Schools to Watch program prior to Laguna getting involved. And that kind of kicked off not just the cycle of continuous improvement at Los Osos Middle School, but it inspired both of our middle schools to want to work together. So in January through June of 2021, we had a combined middle school visioning committee that we put together with employees at both of our sites who kind of represented a little bit of everything on our sites. Teachers who had been there for a long time are veteran teachers, some of our brand new teachers, some of our teachers who we drew in just to challenge some of the ideas that we may have, and then other ones that we knew that would be cheerleaders behind this. And when we first brought our group together, we looked at the Schools to Watch beliefs. And we had our committee rank the beliefs in order of what they thought was most important. And it led to a really fantastic conversation because most people had so much struggle ranking the beliefs because they're all things that we firmly feel about middle school. So at that point, we knew we had put the right group of people together. And we came together to really talk about how we can align our middle schools philosophically while we're also doing that continuous improvement work that Schools to Watch encourages. So in April, we presented our vision and a link with to Schools to Watch with Scott Steele, who's been helping us out in this work. And that led to a board study session around middle school that kind of brought you up to date on some of the things that we've been doing so far and some of the things that we worked on last year as our group. And really what we had come up with last year was a fairly extensive vision statement and then a lot of mission statements underneath that of things that our middle schools are really committing to do. And those do align with our Schools to Watch curriculum. In 2021, we're going to continue to work with our visioning teams, 2021, 22, at our sites and together. And really that bringing our team together is key in making sure that when we're talking about how we're doing middle school in San Luis Coastal, we're not just talking about LAMS and LOMS because our school's personalities are different, but our philosophy is the same. We're doing our board presentation tonight, which is great. And our next steps are we're going to start working with our site teams to continue to develop and align our practices. Because when we look at Schools to Watch, it really is about what actions are we taking at our schools. And again, even though our schools have different personalities, we want to make sure that we are looking at what our students really need from the middle school perspective and then making sure that we're providing that at both sites. And then our goal in 22-23 is to have LAMS do their Schools to Watch application. So we will hopefully become a Schools to Watch school as well. LOMS will reapply because a Schools to Watch application isn't a one and done. It is a series of ongoing improvements that you do. So every 3 years, you've got to reapply and requalify to show that you're committing to that long-term, ongoing, continuous change. What we're hoping to do in the 23-24 is really take a critical analysis of the progress of both schools, assuming that we're both Schools to Watch schools. And even if not, we're going to continue this work because our committee really likes working together with the hopes of coming up with a five-year plan, kind of setting those goals for the next 5 years of where do we want our middle schools to be as we roll forward. Okay, next slide, please. So why are we using Schools to Watch? Well, we have absolutely fantastic middle schools, and we know that. We score well on our standardized testing. We've got great teachers who really do care about our kids. And so with that as a foundation, we know that we always want to get better. Just hearing the conversation earlier tonight about closing that achievement gap, that's something that's important to everyone. When we look at the culture of our schools and the needs of our students, we want to make sure that we are responsive to the whole student in our schools. Schools to Watch takes research that has been done on the intellectual development of the middle-aged child or middle school, not middle-aged, middle school-aged child, as well as the social and emotional components, and puts it all together and creates a rubric whereby we can score ourselves in four different domains, which Carl's going to talk about on our next slide when we get there. But those domains incorporate all of the things that come up at a school, the systems and the structures of the middle school, the challenge, the rigor of the middle school, how we actually provide instruction for all of our students, and then the culture on our campus. And one of the foundational tenets of Schools to Watch is that we have to create a vision on our campus that our staff really understands and accepts as their core vision. But our staff isn't the only group that needs to know that. Our students need to accept and understand that as the core vision, and our parents and community also need to have that as part of it. So when all of those groups have the same goal, have the same vision, and understand this is what middle school is supposed to be, then we're hitting that high-functioning middle school area there. So Schools to Watch provides us with a framework that we can look at how we're doing based on a rubric that is a 1 to 4 score, 1 being we're not doing it really at all at our school, and a 4 being it's happening, and it's happening for every kid on our campus in several different domains. And again, Carl's going to show that on our next slide. But that's why we've chosen Schools to Watch, because it's not a one and done. You don't apply, you get the award, you stick a banner up on the wall, yay, you're Schools to Watch. Schools to Watch is a commitment to consistently and repeatedly looking at that rubric over and over again to make sure that we're really providing all of the things that our students need on a regular basis. Carl, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All righty. If you change the slide, please. As John was talking, you know, he mentioned there's 4 main areas that the Schools to Watch, you evaluate your sites. And, you know, this we've done this twice at Loam's, and it's a very rich process, and it's amazing that even as a small school, sometimes we get so set in our ways that we forget there are so many amazing things that are happening. And so Schools to Watch really validates this and helps the staff reflect also. And, you know, and I think the reality of the Schools to Watch rubric is it very much aligns some of the areas in academic excellence or developmental responsiveness or social equity, which are 3 of the main areas. You'll see that there are, when there are needs in those areas, maybe our Youth Truth Superintendent Senate students are finding similar needs in those surveys. So it's not like it stands out just by itself. It really is reflective of all the things that we do. These are the 4 main areas. There are about 10 sub questions in each area. And so as a staff, we look at these and we rank ourselves and we talk about it. And John's going through that process right now. Can you go to the next slide, please? All right. As far as School to Watch progress at both schools, you know, like I said, Loam's has already been through 2 cycles of this. I'm not going to read through all of this because a lot of it's similar, but the middle school visioning committee work began, like John said, in 2021. And this is really the work to identify the areas that we can grow our middle schools into truly addressing the needs for our middle grade aged students. And again, you see in here that there is the staff inputs across the board. It can be a long process, but it's very valuable. Youth Truth provides us, again, similar data and validates some of the Schools to Watch and vice versa. you know, we like to work to align our goals with the schools to watch rubric, and we're glad that the board has made it important enough to have schools to watch to be kind of a guide for our middle schools. And so again, we're reapplying in the fall of 23, and John's doing this in the fall of 22. So if you can go one more slide, please.
So I'll pick it up from here. So obviously we've heard from John and Carl this evening about middle school reform, and we've heard a lot of information about the schools to watch, whether it be the rubric or analysis of surveys. But what we have to center it back towards constantly our students. We have to bring it back to that conversation. How do we create that culture of excellence around students and the work of staff and the work of the district to support that? And in our next steps, we have to make sure that we're still talking about relevant and rigorous curriculum and engaging curriculum. We had a 30-second soundbite from the iInnovate presentation this evening that Dr. Prater was on, talking about the three R's. And ironically, we're still talking about rigorous and relevant and engaging curriculum for everyone. The master schedule is an area that John and Carl are reviewing with their staff, because the master schedule can be the key to perhaps offering additional opportunities for students at the middle schools to explore and to have opportunities in a wonderful elective classes and courses. We also have to think about our extracurricular offerings. We have to think about how do we think outside the box a little bit within our middle schools. Is there a methodology that we could think about offering dynamic course offerings maybe after school and not necessarily get locked into the end of the school day as much? Could we have our facility maybe available for students for co-curricular and extracurricular activities early evening? How do we make sure that from a cultural perspective, our middle schools are the epicenter for those students in the years that they're in middle school? And I love the work that John and Carl are doing with their faculty to kind of reflect on that, analyze that, to think outside the box and use that rubric of schools to watch to get them there. We're also working with groups within our community around equity. And John and Carl are bringing two groups in to work with their staff specifically to kind of grow their knowledge and understanding of what equity is and what does it look like on their campus. And of course, our staff are integral to that. How do we continue to develop our staff and to get buy-in and to partner with our staff? And so those are the next steps, obviously anchored back to the Schools to Watch document, but also the board vision and goals. And John and Carl will be able to speak to anything as well that you may have a question about with regard to our next steps. Thank you.
Okay, board members, do you have questions? Mrs. Roger, followed by Mrs. Sheffer, and then Ms. Dobler-Drew.
I'll go now. Going back to slide 6, we see the four... well, the rubrics, I guess, or domains that Schools to Watch is going to be judging our middle schools on. And then when we go to slide 7, I just noted as I read through that the staff rubric for Los Osos Middle School has staff rubric input on all areas, which I take to mean those four domains. And then for Laguna, it says staff rubric input on academic excellence and social equity. And I wonder, Mr. Calandro, could you explain why you're focusing on those two rubrics if you're planning to go in 2022 to apply?
Sure, definitely. And we're not just focusing on those two. Those are the two that we've managed to do so far. As Carl said, the rubric is pretty extensive, and it does require a lot of work. And because Schools to Watch is really about ongoing improvement, taking a look at each area in depth, having those conversations about it, looking at where we're strong, looking at where we're weak, rather than we can plow through the whole thing, mark it all off, score it, be done with it, try to write something up that works. To me, that's not a genuine use of the Schools to Watch rubric or process. So we've been breaking it into small chunks throughout the year and really looking at where we are and what we do. So I've had my staff look at it through their own classroom lens for each of those areas, as well as kind of a whole school lens both. The school swatch rubric is written for the whole school. So you really, everybody in your school is supposed to judge the whole school. I'm having my teachers do it for their own classroom and then also do it for the whole school to really look at what do we think we do in our own room and then how do we perceive our own school. And then when we compare that with our youth truth data and the other surveys that we do with our parents, it really does give us a pretty good look as to what we believe we're doing versus what people see us doing or perceive us to be doing. So we're taking it slowly. We will finish all four sections of it by the end of the year, with at least one or two passes at each section before we get ready to start writing our application. Just where we are in our year right now, we took academic excellence as our first chunk. Our social equity piece was great timing for that because we did have our schools to watch information from our students and our parents and our staff as well. And looking even just at the differences between the questions on the Youth Truth Survey for social equity versus the questions on schools to watch for how we would want to practice social equity in our school is giving us a lot to talk about along the way. So in addition to doing the rubric, we're also having conversations and thinking about where will we need to plan? How do we prioritize the work that we're doing? Where are we seeing the gains and where are we seeing our deficits at this point? And a lot of the things that we're finding show up in each of those areas. So you're gonna find some scheduling questions in that academic excellence piece. You're gonna find some scheduling questions in the academic rigor piece and the developmental appropriateness piece. So it's woven, all of those pieces are woven into each of those sections, but we're taking them one at a time to really make sure that we're studying it, thinking about it, and coming up with a thoughtful proposal for schools to watch, because we have to show what we're really great at, but then we also have to talk about what we're going to be working on for the next year.
I think, Marilyn, one of the pieces, the way you can look at a schools to watch process is it's similar to what high schools do with a WASC evaluation. But the big difference in schools to watch, which I think makes it most valuable, is that in a WASC evaluation, you are putting together artifacts and documents and demonstrating what your school does. In a schools to watch, you are, your staff and your community are evaluating your school and you are ranking yourselves and you are determining your rank and where the areas of growth, where the areas of excellence are. So that's kind of how that process works. And it behooves you to take time to go through it because like John said, you could do the whole four domains and all the questions and sit down for an hour and do it and it wouldn't be very valuable.
An excellent answer, gentlemen. Thank you.
Great. Mrs. Fram.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yes, hi. I love the presentation, but I'm more curious about the piece on social equity. And I have a couple of quick questions about that. Who are the groups that are brought in to consult on it? And what are some examples that are of consideration in this area?
So, Ms. Dobler-Drew, what we started this year at Loam's is we had Rick Mayfield assisted us and we were able to contract out with Cultural Creations, which is a group led by one of our students' parents, Sandra Saruf Levine, and her partner, Pedro Arroyo. And they've been doing this work around the state. And basically what they have allowed our staff to do, and as we've done this over about 8 different hours of engagement, and we're concluding our last one here a week from tomorrow, is to look at how Loam's and Loam's staff is equitable and inclusive in our practices and what we do. And so, that is addressing subgroups across the same things that we're looking at as far as our testing. It's our socioeconomic disadvantage. It's our our language learners, it's our people of color, it's our people of sexual orientation. And so across all of these areas, we have looked into some of the practices and things at Loam's. And our last one is going to be, focusing on how we are equitable and inclusive in our discipline practices across the school. And that's referring to how we all kind of have a common mantra in how we treat kids. And we do that well, but it's been enlightening. And I think our staff has really done an amazing job of taking what Sandra and Pedro present and sometimes some very heavy conversations and thought processes. And so we're finishing this up on February 8th or 9th. And they're jumping over to Laguna to finish the year with John and his school.
And we're really focusing on looking at any biases that we may have in how we approach our students. For my staff, the real frame is how can we better show up for all of our students all the time? It also includes our students with disabilities, in addition to all of our other subgroups as well, looking at our English learners, where are there opportunities for our students to see themselves in our curriculum? Where are the opportunities for our students to identify and share who they are and the importance of their culture? And a lot of it is just opening our eyes to what are the things that we assume that every student knows? Why do we assume those things? And then how do we change that in our culture, in our classrooms, to make sure that if we've got assumptions that don't fit the cultural makeup of our classroom, how do we address that? How do we create situations where our students are really maximizing their learning and feeling a part of our campus and who we are, and really creating a place where all students are seen and comfortable.
Right. Well, we certainly want that. Well, the other question, one more, is who's the other group that's coming in besides Cultural Creations? You said there'll be two consulting groups coming in?
Oh, no, it's two people are consulting.
Oh.
They're doing both sites, but they're partners.
Okay, thank you.
Sheffer.
Thank you. So I remember quite a few years ago when Dr. Prater first began talking about schools to watch, and when Los Osos Middle School became the pilot program in our district for doing that, and how exciting it was to be part of that process. And as trustees, we certainly didn't have many opportunities to participate. That wasn't really our role, but to follow along and watch the process unfold and how the rewarding effort it took to accomplish that, and how exciting it was to have that special designation. And it's been a board priority and goal in the intervening years to see Laguna Middle School go down that same path. So, Mr. Calandro, I just want you to know how excited I am for your school to go through this process, for the students to have this experience and be able to participate in contributing to making this this happen, and for your leadership in guiding your school through this process. I'm very excited and looking forward to watching it all unfold. So thank you. You're helping us accomplish. You're helping us help Dr. Prater to accomplish a priority that the board has set out for him. So thanks.
Well, and I think too, the having the Middle School Visioning Committee as not just a bridge for the Schools to Watch program between the two schools, but really almost like an oversight committee for our schools that really is driven by that schools to watch philosophy, and a great opportunity for our teachers to hear and drive that conversation from our school level of, here's what we see in our schools. These are the things that are important to us, and that both schools are now able to speak the same language and hear each other on that level, I think is going to really help solidify the importance of the work, not just at each of our sites, but really that this is a district level commitment.
Those are good points. Thank you.
Okay. Any other board comments? Again, this is not an action item, but I will go to the public to see if there's anyone who would like to address the board on this item. There is someone, yes. And can you... Okay, someone named Aline. Aline, are you there? Arlene? Arine?
Can you hear me now?
We sure can.
Okay.
Are you ready? Your 3 minutes will begin now.
Okay, thank you. My name is Arlene Yost. I used to be a teacher at Laguna Middle School, so I wanted to especially tune in this evening to listen to the updates. Sounds exciting. I'm really impressed. I'd like to find out more about the schools to watch rubric that they're talking about. The only concern I would have is with the word equity. To me, that's a buzzword that actually puts one group of people over another and their interests one over another rather than equality. So I'm going to investigate that a little bit more. So I'm concerned about equity versus equality. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one. Thank you very much. Thanks to John, Carl, Leslie. We really appreciate
Thank you.
It. We'll move on to item 9.04, LCAP outreach plan. Mrs. Frost.
All right. Got it. Thank you. Thank you, Mandy, very much. Happy to be here tonight to talk to you about our LCAP outreach plan. This is the first of several presentations our board will have regarding LCAP, and this is something that I think you're familiar with over the course of the last several years. And the LCAP is the Local Control Accountability Plan, and this is a plan that's required by all districts throughout the state of California, and our requirement is to develop a plan that looks at improving student academic performance. And they really ask us to concentrate in three areas. They want us to look at socioeconomically disadvantaged students, English learner students, and foster homeless youth. So that's a theme that goes through our plan, but we all know that the plan that we develop will affect all kids throughout our district. Whether they're in those categories or not, they will benefit by the action items, the services, and the expenditures that we've included in our plan. Mandy, next slide. Thank you. So what we're talking about this evening is outreach. And it's really a central requirement to the LCAP. We are required to go to all stakeholders and get feedback regarding the LCAP that we are writing. And you can see in this graphic that San Luis Coastal really does reach out to a number of stakeholders in our district and in our community. And while I don't want to talk about absolutely every spoke on this wheel, there are some that I would like to highlight. Starting at the top, you'll see our Superintendent's Student Senate. This is a group of students from across our secondary schools, very active kids in their schools, active kids in giving feedback to district personnel to improve our district, to improve their schools. We present the LCAP survey to them, talk about the things that we've done, where we'd like to go, and we get their feedback. We also go to our Common Ground Task Force, which you will see on there, a community group, right? There's community members in there that can advise us on our LCAP. You'll see our third spoke right there is staff presentations. Ryan Pinkerton and I and Kim McGrath before me with Ryan went from school to school throughout the district to ensure that we are getting feedback from every teacher who would like to give us feedback, from every classified staff member who would like to give us feedback. And before they give us feedback, we tell them about our budget. Mr. Pinkerton goes through a really detailed explanation of the money that it's available to the LCAP, the money that's available in the district, and then I follow it up with the feedback that we've received from our stakeholders and how we've used it, and we ask them for more feedback for the coming year. At the very bottom, you'll see that we have board meeting presentations. This is the first of several. We will come back to the board after every step in our process of creating the LCAP, giving you information that you also can give us feedback on. If you look immediately to the left, what we would call 9 o'clock is our District English Learner Advisory Committee. I think you know about Mr. Mayfield's work with our DLAC group. LCAP is a focus of the group in February, and he really takes time to get these leaders in our EL program to understand the importance of the LCAP, the action items we've included that affect their kiddos, and where we can go from there. So there's a lot of activities that he does with this group to ensure that we get feedback. And then immediately up, you'll see our district equity team, another community group, and then finally our Title I Advisory Council. So a lot of opportunities for feedback from stakeholders within the district and in our community. A normal question might be, what are you doing every year to change your feedback, to ensure that you get more feedback? And every year we do analyze exactly what we've provided for our stakeholders. We want to increase the number of surveys that are completed every year. Last year we had about 645 surveys completed. We would like to increase that. Rick Mayfield has added activities to some of the groups that he's working with to make sure that they understand the process and understand the ideas that they might share with us. So kind of an interactive process rather than just a survey for them to fill out. And then yes, this year, Mr. Mayfield is also going to work with our site principals so that they can work with the members of their own parent groups, their PTA groups, also their ELACs on campus, talk to them about the LCAP and get feedback from them. So we have, I think, a very robust outreach opportunity, one that we evaluate and try to improve every year, and one that we sincerely use in terms of feedback that we receive. And that's next presentations that we'll have for you. What did that feedback look like? What does that mean to our focus areas? That type of thing. So I'm happy to answer any questions about how we are facilitating feedback from stakeholders in the community.
Are there any questions from board members? Mr. Buckman.
I feel like I'm getting to know you and Ryan really well.
That's okay.
I've had the ability to attend so far two of these presentations, one mm-hmm. at Pacheco and one at San Luis High. I hope to continue. It's really interesting to listen. Ryan's recap is great. Your presentation's great. But what stands out for me is the openness and the real outreach to get input from the sites, from the staff at the sites. This is where it's going to end up. Mm-hmm. It's going to land up on them. So I just wanted to thank you. It's been good. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. We've been to three schools so far, and we'll be hitting every school in the district.
Mrs. Frame.
Yes, Ms. Frost. Thank you so much. One thing I noticed, and I don't know if this is different, is because the LCAP we're trying to focus on, of course, best instruction for all students, but also hold ourselves accountable to those subgroups.
Yes.
It's the first time I've noticed is that we are asking for identification for, you know, from those subgroups. Is this, have we done that before? And then are we going to wait, you know, kind of those responses because it's from those particular groups that we're interested in serving?
We don't necessarily wait those responses. It's just good information for us to have when we're looking at how successful we were in reaching some of our at-risk populations. Okay. Right. So I think what Mrs. Frame is talking about is in the survey, the parents will note whether they are an SED family, whether they are an EL family, or whether they are both. So we can track the number of families in those categories who have responded to our outreach. So for us, a higher percentage means that we really have gotten feedback from those families for whom the LCAP is most intended.
So is that a change? Because it seems like
I'd have to honestly ask Mr. Mayfield.
Because that's great.
Well, we've had this discussion frequently over the years. Like, are we getting to these folks who are most impacted by the LCAPs? We decided to add questions to the survey, and I was pretty impressed with the numbers, about 20% EL and 22% SED who responded, self-identified, and their optional self-identification. So you can continue with the survey without answering.
Okay. So do we, but I guess, do we notice trends, I guess, or would we be informed about the trends that these particular groups are saying? You know what I mean? Because they are, if they're self-identifying and there are trends within that, I mean, would we see those trends or?
Yes, I think we can identify those responses. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, I just want to make sure that for the public who's watching this, that they understand how important this is. And the feedback they give us is really treasured and valuable to us. There's some things that the district does that are, you know, among the top things that we're responsible for. LCAP is one. Our budget is another. Hiring our superintendent. Those are things, you know, assuring student achievement. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we assure student achievement and which drives our budget is through the LCAP process. So if you have an opportunity to participate in the LCAP and giving us LCAP feedback, we'd really appreciate it. It is very serious and we do take it very seriously.
Thank you.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this, even though it is a discussion item? Great. We'll go to item 9.05, proposed new board policy 5126. Awards for achievement. This is a first reading. Mrs. Frost?
Yes, thank you very much. So new board policy 5126, awards for achievement. Just a couple of things in this policy to bring to your attention. It does formalize to awards that we already have in district, and that's the Golden State Seal Merit Diploma and the State Seal of Biliteracy, two things that we already offer to our graduates at all of our high schools. I do recommend a second reading.
Okay. Is there anybody that objects to this coming back for a second reading? Okay, seeing no one. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this? This will come back at the next meeting. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. We'll bring this back for a second reading at the next meeting. Moving on to our action consent agenda, please let me know if you'd like one of the items pulled. 10.01, acceptance of donations. 10.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.03, approval of purchase orders and CALP card statements.
Pull.
Okay, hold on just a second here. Uh, 10.04, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.05, adult education salary addendum. 10.06, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.07, authorizing continued use of remote teleconferencing provisions pursuant to AB 361 and Government Code Section 54953. 10.08, proposed revision to Board Policy 3530, Risk Management Insurance. This is a second reading. And 10.09, Proposed new board policy 6152.1, placement of mathematics courses, second reading. Okay, and we have a motion to approve items 10.01, 10.02, and then 10.04 to 10.09.
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Frame and seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a roll call vote. Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers? Yes. Mrs. Roger? And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Mr. Buckman, you pulled 10.03.
Yes, thank you, Chris. As when I go through this consent agenda and I look at the POs, I always kind of look for the items that have a pretty good high price tag. And so this time I noticed there's something called Hinge Education, which is roughly $65,000, and SHI that was $56,000. So I gave Katie a call, and she helped me understand. So just to point out, Hinge Education is an agreement we have for 5 days of professional development and instruction and leadership coaching, and SHI is a group that we use to purchase technology, such as a recent PO for Novell. So with that, I'd like to move approval of 10.3.
And I will second that. Is there any further discussion? I need to go to the public on this since it has been pulled. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back for a vote. Mr. Buckman? Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Roger? Mrs. Frame? Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers?
Yes.
And Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Item 11.02, advanced agenda. Mrs. Dobler-Drew? Or 10.02 advanced agenda? I'm sorry, 11.02.
There we go. Yes, I wanted to address the public comment that we had tonight and the correspondence that we had also regarding the subject of masks. And I am proposing that we put that on the agenda for a future meeting. I realize there's an MOU with the unions. I don't know how that would be affected, but it seems that it's getting to be time to have a discussion out front among the board about what we can do to help the children. Well, for instance, that who need to see the lips in order to learn reading better, for one thing, and perhaps help our metrics, not to mention the health issues that have already been covered extensively. So I would just love to see the board put that on the agenda.
Yep. Okay, thank you. And as you know, our procedure is for you to make a request to the superintendent and me, and then we will discuss it, and then we'll bring it back to the board at that point.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
How about any other advanced agenda items? Okay, 12.01, reports by board members. Who's got something to report? Mr. Buckman.
I guess I should leave my mic on all night. I want to thank the board for sticking. This is a late meeting. We do this occasionally, and I apologize for taking a little more time. I'd like to recognize that this is the first day of Black History Month. It's really important, and I'd like to recognize the growing recognition of Blacks in U.S. history. I recently read that there were Blacks in the among the very first ships that arrived here, and I thought that was very interesting. I hadn't heard that before. I'd also like to recognize a trend in California of community schools. There's some money, quite a bit of money in the state budget right now for funding them. The concept behind a community school is to actually turn school site into community center, and it does direct links with services that are available in the community. And I thought it was an interesting topic, and I've got an article on it, and I'll share that with Dr. Prater. Thanks.
Thank you. Other board reports? Okay, seeing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.